After wishing everyone Shavua Tov, you know, on Sundays and Tuesdays I have Chumash. Anyone who wants to join at 11 o'clock. Sometimes we discuss Halacha from the Parasha, sometimes Hashkafa from the Parasha. And there's no rhyme or reason, and it all depends upon what I got to prepare and what I didn't. So for Parashas Bahar, which we read yesterday here in Eretz Yisrael, I'd like to study with you a pasuk that appears in Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Now, just a little bit of background here. You may recall that in Psukim Yud Dalid, up until Tezayin, yeah, there's a parsha called Ona. Ona means if I sell you something and deliberately I overcharge you. That's the case of Nis'an Elokeach, where the buyer was cheated because I overcharged him. And then there's the flip side, where the buyer knew the market value, the true market value. The seller was unaware of the market value, and the buyer underpaid. And that's a case of Nis'ana Mocher, where the Mocher, the seller, was cheated. In both cases, there's a violation of the Isur Ona, and that's Dorais. And then all of a sudden, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, which seems to be a repetition of what we just had, the Torah says in Parashas Bahar, Lo Sonu Ish Es Hamiso, that a person should not cheat his friend. I mean, the same word Ona is used over here. And if that be the case, the question is, what is the Torah coming to teach over here? So if you look at Rashi, which is on the top of your page 1, Rashi says very clearly, Kan, here, it's a whole new Avera. It's not the Avera that we learned before. His here, the Torah is warning us, Al Onas Dvarim. Onas Dvarim. That's the concept that we want to analyze today. What is Onas Dvarim? It's not Onas Mamon. I'm not directly causing you a loss in your bank account by overcharging you or underpaying. But here it's a different kind of loss that I cause you. So the word Onah means whenever I cause you some sort of a hefset. Usually a loss is identified with Mamon. But the Torah now adds a new category of Onah, in which your loss is no longer a monetary loss whatsoever, but rather Onas Dvarim. Rashi says, what's Onas Dvarim? The power of speech. Shelo yaknit ish es chavero. There's a concept called haknata, where you insult someone, you cause him a loss in terms of his ability to function, he's anguished, he's what?
Status.
Well, I don't know about his status, we didn't go that far. That's going to be perhaps Motzi Shemra, where you affect his status, but in this context, you cause him psychological pain and anguish. You hurl very spiteful and difficult words towards his direction. Rashi adds another subcategory of Ona, where in a sense you might cause a person a loss. Lo yasienu eitza shon eino hogenes. Eino hogenes lo, meaning you give him a bad piece of advice. You know, he wants to know whether he should take a job or not take a job. You want to know whether he wants to know whether he should marry this girl or not marry this girl. And you give him a bad piece of advice. Lefi darko v'hanaso shel yoetz. Hanaso shel yoetz means the person who gave the advice and violates the Isur Ona, he's going to benefit from that lousy advice that he gave this person. Now notice that the Torah ends this pasuk by saying v'yareisa melokech ani Hashem. And as a methodological rule, whenever you see that pasuk in the Torah, it appears often, what it means is that the objective action can be interpreted in many different ways. There's no way that two witnesses could testify objectively and prove that the intention of the person who did it was negative, was to try to cause you a loss. The Eidim, the witnesses, could not possibly know that. Who knows what your intention is? Hashem knows. That's called V'yareisa Melekecha Ani Hashem. Like the Gemara says in Bav Metzia, that a Talmid Chacham should not deliberately try to walk by a public area so that people stand in front of him. He should try, if he can, to go around. But in certain cases, he has no choice. You know, he has to go up to the Bima take out the Sefer Torah and read, and he knows everyone's going to stand for him. So what is his intention? What does he have in mind? So the Torah says, V'yareisa. Hashem knows. Hashem is the Bokhen Klayus V'leif. He knows whether you were motivated by self-glory or you were motivated because you had no other choice. You're really a humble person. You're not looking for this grandiose applause where a stand-up ovation, but you had no other choice. So in those cases, it's totally, it's dependent upon the Kavanas HaLev. And that's what the Pasuk says here. The Im Tovar Rashi says, Mio dea im niskavanti l'ra'a. I gave him a piece of advice. How do you know for sure that I had a bad, it was malicious intent? And the answer is, no one could know. L'kach nemer, that's why the Torah adds, V'yareisam elokecha hayodea machshavos hu yodea. Only God could know what your true motivation was and what your intention. It's a dover, shemol, mosul l'lev, it's something in the heart. It's not objective, it cannot be seen by the spectator. No one could establish it, Elamisha Machshava Belibo, except for the person who has the Machshava and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who sees and knows the Machshava. So we have now a concept called Onas Dvarim. It's a lav in the Torah. It's codified by all the Moniyah mitzvahs as part of Taryag. And therefore, if you'll take a look on the flip side of your page, which is page 2, on the bottom right, you will see that the Sefer Achinuch, who is one of the Rishonim who codified the mitzvos, he has the mitzvah, it's called Shin Lamed Ches, so it's pretty easy to remember the number, Shlach, and it's called Shin Lamed Aleph, I made a mistake, I thought it was Shin Lamed Ches, sometimes the Ches looks like the Aleph. But Shin Lamed Aleph Shalom Lahonos. Oh no, I'm sorry. Back again to what my original. It is Shin Lamed Ches. But Shalom Lahonos Echad Mi Yisrael Bidvar. Now, what's included in the definition of Onos Dvarim? The Sefer Achinuch here in Shin Lamed Ches really, summarizes what we have in the Rambam. The Rambam, you'll see on page 3 of your a little printout, the Rambam says, His hardu mi'honos k'tsasenu es k'tsasenu bidvarim. We're not allowed to insult other people and cause them spiteful harm. U'shenemar yach shalo. Who, and when does he violate the Isusha Nemar Lo, when he says to his friend Ma'amorim, statements Yachivehu, he causes him Ke'ev, meaning psychological anguish, Yachisehu, he causes him anger, and his friend is so hurt by these words, Lo Yuchal Lamon, he doesn't know what to say, he like becomes almost speechless, dry at the mouth, as we say, Nei Shemis Bayishman, he gets so embarrassed by these words. And the Rambam gives two examples. The first example the Rambam gets from the Gemara in Masechta Bava Metzia Perek HaZov, which is the perek that deals with Onah, both Onas Momen and Onas Tvarim, that's on page 1 of your handout. And you will see that the Mishnah itself codifies this Isur Lav of Onah. And the Mishnah tells us the following. It says in the Mishnah, Kishem. What does Kishem mean, Rabosai?
In the same
way. Right, just as. Kishem. She'onah b'mekach u'mekar u'memkar. There's an onah in selling and buying. So too kach onah b'dvarim. There is something called onah b'dvarim. And what is onah b'dvarim? The Mishnah says, im haya bal tshuva. If the person had violated all the different isurim because he didn't know any better, now he became a bal tshuva. Lo yomar lo, you're not allowed to say to him, zechar ma'asecha rishonim. Remember your earlier days. You think you're a big shot. I'm going to remind you. I remember what you used to do back in your youth. Then the Mishnah goes on and gives another example. And the example that the Mishnah gives is the case of a ger. a person comes from or is a convert, comes from a family of converts, lo yomar lo, you shouldn't say to him, zechar ma'asecha, ma'ase avosecha, remember what your ancestors used to do. And the Mishnah says that that comes on the, in addition to Noas Dvarim, also under the Iser of Ger Lo Sona. In other words, you're not allowed to put any anguish, you put the convert into any anguish. So these are all included. If you go look back to the Rambam, which was again on the top of page 3, the Rambam says, Kimo, on the fourth line, Shetizko Lo Pu'ulos, Nah, Russo, you remind him of what he did in his youth before the Asa Tshuva. He did Tshuva, and he gives another example towards the end. He says, "Gedolo nos dvar mi nos mamon," that when you cause someone psychological anguish, it's even worse than monetary damage. We'll have to see why that's so. Why would the Isser of Onas Dvarim be more severe than the Isser of Onas Mamon?
Because you can't pay for it.
Correct, you can't reimburse him. You know, it's irreversible. No compensation will do. You're right. And that classifies, you know, the mitzvahs of the Torah into two categories. It's what's called Mamon and Guf. Guf means not just the physical body of a person, but all his psychological makeup. And the Rambam gives another example here of a person who says, "Hayu chamarim lo yomer lo kama chefet zeh." You know, you walk into a store and you say, "Well, how much does this cost? Give me a price for this." You have no intention of buying it, and then you hear the price and you just storm order out of place. You turn your back to the seller. And you walk out. It might not be any financial loss to the seller, but can you imagine psychologically what the seller feels like when you turn your back as if to say it's not worth that amount? So we'll see examples of this B'li Neder as we go along.
And maybe it's not worth that amount. I mean, isn't it legitimate to go into several shops to see which shop is selling cheap?
Right, but not if you have no intention whatsoever of buying. You know, you just simply want to know what the price is. Let's say, for example, Michael, you got an anniversary present, right? So somebody gave you a microwave oven as an anniversary present. That's a little bit heavy, but and you're curious to know what he spent. So you go to a store, you have no intention whatsoever of buying. You just want to price it, you know. If you have an honest to goodness will, you know, to compare prices, that's okay. You know, we're talking about
a Gnevas Das
might also come under Gnevas Das. Onos Dvarim and Gnevas Das are really very, very similar. They overlap to a tremendous amount. But that's that's something else.
Price.
If you tell him, look, I'm just curious what the price is, and then he tells you the price. You know, there are certain cases where you ask for a price and you could actually cause the seller a loss, a financial loss. For example, what happens is, if you don't tell the seller that you're just interested in knowing the price, you have no intention of buying, then what he might say to you after he sees that you're not interested in buying, he may say to you, you know what, I'll lower the price for you, I'll give you a bargain, I'll take 10% off. In the meantime, you know, you're too embarrassed to tell him that you're not in the least bit interested in buying, you just want to price it, right? Either because you want to compete with him or because you got a gift or whatever the case may be. And after you mumble something, you walk out of the store, and just as he said to you, I'll charge you 10% less, somebody comes into the store. And Hoyitzvarim, these things have happened. And they say, wait, what are you charging for this? Did I hear that you have a 10% slash price here? And that could actually cause the seller a loss. Because even before he gets into negotiations, he's lowered the price and based on someone who never had any intention to sell. In any event,
to buy,
I'm sorry. So these are the various cases of Onas Dvarim. The sugya here in Perek HaZov goes on to talk about the Iser of being Mevayish Chavero. He says, Kol amalbim pnei chavero baramim ki ilu shofech domim. And the Gemara goes on to say that if you say words that are spiteful and they humiliate a person publicly, we'll have to see what that means, but he can actually forfeit the malbim, the person who embarrassed him, could forfeit his place in the world to come because he's like a shofech domim. Because, you know, a person's face turns red, Tosa says, and therefore it's like you... Yeah, it comes pale or red in the face. And that's considered like shofech domim. So let's go back to the Sefer HaChinuch. As I told you before, the Sefer HaChinuch on the bottom of your page 2, in a sense, is basing, he's standing on the shoulders of the Rambam that we saw, but he adds a very, very important point. So that's what I wanted to study with you on the bottom of your page 2. So first he says, Shalom nomar li Yisrael dvarm shiach yiveyu v'yitzareyu. He should not say to his friend things that will cause him pain. V'ein bo koach le'ozer mehem. He doesn't know how to protect himself. He's really embarrassed. He quotes, the Sefer HaChinuch quotes the Gemara in Bava Metzia that we saw, v'al tshuva, you shouldn't say to him, zechar ma'asecha rishonim. And now he gives another case. This case is based on the so-called friends of Eov. You know, in Spanish they say amigos, right? But not every friend is a good friend. And the question is, how would you classify the friends of Eov? Eov is in tremendous pain. He's suffering. He went through all the tragedies that he experienced. And what does his friend say to him? His friend says to him, "Halo yirasecha kislasecha. You're lacking in emunah and faith. And God doesn't bring about punishment to someone who doesn't deserve it. And basically, my friend, you deserve punishment." And that's what the Sefer HaChinuch says over here, cholim boyim alav. He has choli, which means illness, coming to him. Lo yomer lo. He shouldn't say to him the kider shomer chaver of liyov halo yirasecha kislasecha. And therefore rub it in, so to speak, that it must be that you're guilty. It can't be that you're innocent. Don't present yourself as the tzaddik hador. Shoresh mitzvah zu, if you fast forward again, I want to get to the punchline of this Sefer HaChinuch. He says, ki, what is the Torah interested in? L'asei sholom ben abrios, to have peace and harmony amongst the creatures. Godol ha-sholom, etc., etc. And then he says, "V'roy lizar." Fast forward to the fourth paragraph. You should be very careful. Afilu beremes. It's not just that you said an explicit statement that causes pain and insults someone, but you said it in an indirect way. Now, as other people might not realize, it was direi chiruf that you were trying to humiliate him. Dvarav lo yu nishma chiruf libnei adam. Other people don't hear it clearly as words of chiruf. But nevertheless, even if he does it beremez, that too in an indirect way, v'yareisam elokecha di Hashem, is also a violation of onoas dvarim. And therefore, whenever he causes tsar to the brios, and he does that deliberately, he says in the next paragraph, even if the person, the victim of your words, is a katan, he's below the age of bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, royally zayir, you should be very careful, shalolach ivan b'dvarim yosem midai. Except, of course, in the context of parenting. So law say the exception is Bameshet Srichim. I would underline that word Srichim, Harbe, underline the word Harbe, Kidei Sheyichu Musar. You know, parents, this is not an anti-parent association statement, but parents are very often guilty. We're all human beings, and we're guilty of overstepping our bounds. You know, we want to criticize, but if you're overly critical, you know, a child loses his faith in himself, his self-confidence, and that's really the worst thing. So on the one hand, we have to be miyaser as bincha. You have to make sure that the child is disciplined. Well, we don't believe in a hefkervelt. When I was a youngster, the psychologist came out with a new theory that you should never chastise your child. You know, just let him do what he wants to. You know, then he'll develop to be the greatest and the most happy child. But psychologists since then have admitted that that's a false theory. And just like everything in this physical universe grows old and dies, even theories grow old and die. There was once a theory. It's unbelievable to think of things that we were taught as children. I mean, some of the theories are absolutely crazy about... I don't even want to... Oedipus complex and stuff that they taught me when I was a kid. And it's all hogwash. But theories just come and go. And what Chazal is saying over here, that's what the Sefer HaChinuch embodies, is that within the context of the Noas Dvarim, don't think that as a parent, vis-a-vis a young child, you're exonerated, you're exempt from this lav. No, it's a lav that applies even, and perhaps even more so, in the case of parents vis-a-vis their children. And you have to be very careful not to be mitzayer them too much, and not to be overly critical. Now, in the paragraph that starts, V'ulam, which is the second paragraph on the left side, the Sefer HaChinuch addresses the exceptions to the rule. There is a limit to how far this law applies. We don't necessarily believe, as other religions may do, of turn the other cheek. You know, there's a certain point in which if a person insults you, you're allowed to lash back at him. And therefore he says, Ein b'mashma, don't think that included in this avera, Shem bo Yisrael echad v'hiskel v'rshiel etzarech aver b'dvarim, the person attacks you, shelo ya'aneu ha'shomea, that the person's receiving this insult has to be silent, and he has to accept it. That's not the Torah requirement, no. Efshar, that's impossible. Leo saw them ke'evan, that a person can be as callous and as a stone, you know, nothing impacts on a stone. He says, she'emo hofchin, you know, that there's no one who could actually cut into a stone. He says, Va'odin, furthermore, she'yeh b'shtikosu k'modal acherufin. How much more so if in a case, in a situation where his reputation is at stake, and if he silently allows people to call him a mamzer, or whatever they call him publicly, and he doesn't respond, he can lose his status in the Jewish community. Because, you know, shtika kodod, you know, silence. Again, some say that in Yuchsin, if they call you a psul and you're quiet, shtikoso proves that he's a kosher. But others say it's just the opposite. The Bach is of the opinion that if you're shosek, and when they call you a mamzer or a nosin or any other psulim, then that indicates that you admit that you are psul, you know. But be that as it may, you have a right to defend yourself. V'lo yitzava Torah liyos sodom ke'eved shosek, fine. Oh. However, he admits, the Sefer HaChinuch, that there is a level beyond. You know, there's a super pious level of a person who's what's called Ne'lovim V'enom Ne'lovim. V'enom Olvim, excuse me. That's on the bottom. You see it's underlined on the bottom left? Yeah. Okay, so that's based on a Gemara Masechta Shabbos, which means that there's an extra chasidus of a person who's somehow capable of controlling his kas, his anger, to the point in which people insult him, they heap insults on him, and he says nothing. Shomim cherposim einim meshivim. Ovav kitzei sashem shbigvuroso. They are on the highest level. But for you and I would say, again, there may be some very super pious people here in the audience, but assuming we're all more or less in the same level, we have a right to defend ourselves. And here the Sefer HaChinuch says something absolutely amazing. He says, even when you have to respond to these words of insult, then you should do it with a certain sense of sensitivity, of ni'imus, without getting angry. Don't let your anger get the best of it. But mutol lanu lanos l'ksil. What happens if a person really oversteps his bounds? He's a ksil. He's a person who literally is aggressive. He invades your territory. He's above machteres. He tries to create, you know, some sort of illegal competition. You know, he literally penetrates into your area, and he tries to present himself as, oh, he's the great guy. You know, he's the tzaddik. He's doing it for your benefit. You know, they'll always tell you they're doing it for your benefit. If such a person violates, says the Chinuch, oh no. He himself is fooling himself, Kaviyachol. He constantly tells himself that he means for your benefit until finally he convinces himself. And such a person, he says, there's no Yisr Onah to put him in his place. And that's what the Sefer HaChinuch says here. Now, what I wanted to share with you is an insight of the Aruch HaShulchan. Now for this, you'll have to flip for a moment to page 4. And I'm hoping that you'll find it. The bottom of page 4. Do you have such a thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan has a major breakthrough here. At the beginning, he speaks about how terrible of an aver it is to violate onah, and the person who is hurt and insulted and sensitive is going to cry out to Hashem, and as a result, Hashem is going to accept his prayers. The person who insulted him, his prayers will not be accepted. And kol hasharim ninalu chutz mishare ona. The person who cries out because he was insulted, he has a way of penetrating through all the gates of heaven. And then he says that a person has to be very careful with regard to his wife. And he has to be very sensitive. His wife is sensitive. And if he says something that could insult her, then he may violate the Yisro Onah. Now, if she's asking for an honest-to-goodness opinion, you know, about the way she looks or the food she cooked, that's something else. But, you know, most women don't really want an honest answer, I don't think. I don't know, I shouldn't say that. But you have to be a genius to figure out what exactly your wife would like to hear. Right. You know, they expect you to read their minds. You know, and there was a movie once about, I don't know the name of it, don't ask me, about this man who was eight, he had this power of reading the mind. And the women just went wild over him because... But in any event, now we're ready for the Aruch HaShulchan's amazing Chiddush. The Aruch HaShulchan says towards the end of his presentation that there are indeed two categories of Onah. And he says that there's Onah of the Nefesh and Onah of the Guf. Let me see if I can find the... Yeah, I don't. I gave out all my photocopies here without leaving myself a copy, of course. I do that very often. Yeah, I'll give it right back to you. And he says the following: Yesh ba'onah svarim shnei mini onos. He says there's onah b'mischar in business dealings, right? He has no intention to buy it, as we said before. And you know, somebody comes in to buy a certain item and he says, you know, go there, you'll get it from there, and he knows that he's not going to find it, this will come back here, and he'll be so desperate he'll pay any price, because he really, you know, he wants to teach him that, you know, he's got the monopoly in town. Or alternatively, by this guy going to someone else and asking for that object, he'll be humiliated by it. And then is the second category, Ona Binyane Nefesh. And that means the cases that we had before, Baal Tshuva, his soul is sensitive, and you tell him about all the treifas that he ate, and he, you know, he used to eat this, and he used to eat that, he used to violate the Shabbat, whatever you tell him. Or, for example, you tell a ger about his mishpacha, his low beginnings, a person is ugly, so you tell him how ugly he is, a Baal Mum, he has a blemish, you point out his blemishes. All these cases, he classifies as onah b'inyane nefesh, with regard to the nefesh of the person. And that, he says, people are very sensitive. And he quotes again what we saw in the Rambam and the Chinuch about, you know, pointing out to a person that if he's suffering, it's because of his criminal acts. Zechar mihu naki avad, who's a clean person, has a perfect record, and avad, and he's lost, meaning he's destroyed by Hashem. Now, at the end of this presentation, he adds another class, another example of onah b'nefesh, v'chein yizor shel yechana shem ra l'chavero, not to give a derogatory name to his friend. And again, I come back to parenting again, because, you know, many parents have the tendency of giving a nickname to the child that sticks for life. And sometimes those nicknames are less than complimentary. You know, if the kid is a little bit small, you call him a peanut, and tzutzik, or one of those names, you know, and that sticks for life. So you got to be very careful about nicknaming a person, because that might be, in fact, a violation of onas dvarim, insofar as it causes pain to someone else. Now, on page 5, which I left out, because we don't have time to do all of this, there's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he wants to know if you cause pain to your older brother, because in a case where your older brother is having trouble in Shidduchim, he's having trouble finding a mate, and you as the younger brother decide that you're going to get married before him, and Rabbi Yishu was asked whether or not, if let's say the younger brother gets suggested a Shidduch, whether he's allowed to pursue that, or does he have to wait until his older brother gets married, because he's causing pain to his older brother. And Rabbi Moshe says, again, we don't have time to go through the tshuva. It's very complicated, very sensitive. A lot of insights into the psychology of a human being. He says, Poshut lani yazdaiti, I have no question and qualms about it. The af, even lechatchila yochol hatzor elisa isha, af al pi sha'ochiv ha'gadol od izdamin lo adayin isha lisa'ena. In other words, the older brother has a chiyuv to get married, that's his chiyuv. But that doesn't mean that you, as the younger brother, have to give up on your chiyuv and fulfilling your obligation to get married. Eich shaych shalo yikayim chiyuvo. Just because his brother has, I have the feeling, again I'm reading a little between the lines, because this is all my own prejudice, that Rav Moshe has an agenda over here. He thinks that maybe the older brother is dilly-dallying, you know, that no one's good enough for him or something like that. I don't know. He doesn't say that, but...
You can't possibly go through life like that. I mean, because what happens if the older brother never gets married? You
right. I think that's what he means. Right. Lo shaych she is batal mi mitzvah, so hatzar, the younger brother can't be misbatal from his mitzvah because of his older brother. But I would suggest, even after this tshuva, he says, Masha Omer Achiv, his brother says, Subitzar Godol, Imhuyi Solifonov, he says that Asulo, you know, the brother who has tsar because his younger brother is getting married first, that he's violating an iser of kina, of jealousy. He has to overcome his jealousy. And ha'av, even the father, Rashoi, he can actively help his younger brother. And he says, ach im omelo ha'av shechoshishi yichle b'no agadol. If he thinks, again, I don't know, this is a very extreme case, that his older brother is going to get sick, psychologically sick, he says, nevertheless, aim less or lat soyer, you can't ask the soyer, but you may want to tell him perhaps, yamtin, maybe he could delay it. Let me just read the language here. He says, Aval ein lesser atzoyer af biofin zeh to chishayach lechayev liechek shiyom lo chaver shim lo yitin lo chayvetz pon matona yech lemizeh sheyitin lo chayvetz. Somebody says, if you don't give me a gift, I'm going to get sick, I'm going to be hospitalized in a mental institution, so therefore you're obligated to give him the gift. He says, ulai yesh la atzoyer limona mishum shu boshes Avur Agadol, because he feels the pain of his older brother. It's almost like Albonas Pnei Chavero. And perhaps he himself is embarrassed, the younger brother, when he gets married first. He says, Harbe Yeshem is Achram Milisa. He says, there are all sorts of reasons why a person might delay his marriage. In Bishvil Yesherot Shoshach and Sumeri Chaim Bitzivar, he thinks that he won't be able to live up to the responsibility of being Mefarnes of family. And he gives a whole bunch of different reasons. Therefore, Mistaber, he finally concludes, Lo Shayach Les O Liodom, you cannot prohibit a person from involving himself in whatever he needs and fulfilling his obligations because someone else, you know, will is delaying marriage in this case. Eini Roashum Iser B'Davar, it's not a Dovah Shalo Kahogen, it's not even something that you should discourage. Sheyisa hatzor etchila adaraba zochem mitzvah rabba dinasuin uperi verivya v'chayev ben esrim. Once he's 20 years old, he's obligated that mitzvah. V'lo tzorech levakish, he doesn't have to look for linotzel his natzlus, you know, that maybe Hashem will punish me. He should have no qualms about it and no reservations.
I would think his marriage is just wonderful. He goes with everything. The younger brother might be more educational, going to university, the older brother not. So he might be beside his older brother with a lot of other things, not just getting married. And he can't hold back just because his older brother is incapable or not
right.
Capable.
Now, what I want to do is, you have pages 6 and 7, if I'm not mistaken. What did I photocopy? Again, this is a gigantic essay. 6 and 7, okay. Now, what I like about this book, which is called L'Reacha Kamocha, I've got the name of the author, so forgive me for that, but he's one of the contemporaries. And what he tries to do is not only to codify the abstract principles and laws, but also to give you hardcore examples. It brings it much more, you know, down to earth. And just as background to this, if you turn, so you should have page 3 open in front of you, but also I'd like you to see page I'm sorry, you should have page 6 open, but I'd like you to also see page 3 at the same time. We saw the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, and we also derived, if you recall, from the Sefer HaChinuch, that even Beremez, indirectly to cause someone pain by hinting at something, that also is prohibited. The Sefer HaChassidim, who lived about 5 centuries ago, and that's number 3, page 3 on the top left, he adds that even to have certain improper behavior in front of others that will cause them a sense of being repulsed by it, that also is a kind of onah in which you cause a person anguish. And he gives some pretty gross examples here. Adam shall hotzi neo michotmo. He blows out, pardon the expression, his snot from his nose, publicly. V'nimos, but it's a dover mos. And he gives other examples, he says, which cause other people suffering because of the way he does it. And then the Shari Tshuva of Rabbein Yonah spends an entire chapter here on the Isur of Onos Dvarim. Hamitzayer kol ish mi Yisrael and Shar Shlishi is even though afal pishlo nichta bo ha'anshim ha'el, even though the Torah doesn't specify all the different punishments, it's not explicit in the Torah, he over belosa, he violates the law of losonu es hamniso bi onos dvarim ha'kosev medaber. And the Torah says that Chazal, I should say, in Torah Shebal Peh, the harsh punishment in certain cases that you insult someone who's very sensitive and you violate Onos Tvarim. And then he gives the examples that we saw of a Baal Tshuva or of a Ger. And in the paragraph that starts Kuf Samach Gimel, he writes that there are three kitos, there are three different examples of people who violate Isurim and their punishment is going to be very severe. And he says that amongst them are those who publicly embarrass others. And if you take a look in the Beis Habakir, the Meiri, he says that Onas Dvarim implies any sort of pseudo bidvarov. It includes any sort of loss or harm that is affected by the words of someone else. And even if you come into a store and you start telling the store owner that his goods are inferior, his merchandise is second rate, mashpil omekho, or you turn to your friend who just paid money for something, he bought something, he's excited about it, he bought a new pair of shoes, and you tell him it's ugly, even so, you're causing him pain, and therefore the olam, a person should have daito mu'ureves imabrios. And therefore the Sefer Yoreim, as we saw in the Sefer HaChinuch on the bottom right, says that even facial grimaces can sometimes entail a violation of Onah. You show him panim royim. So people wake up in the morning and they're in a bad mood. They have to realize that if they're walking around grumpy, it can really cause harm to other people who are around them. And again, it's something that we should be aware of. On page 6, L'Reacha Kamocha, and I'm trying to move at the speed of light. Those who have to go, please go. I always say, as long as you can stay. I'll finish it around noon. I just wanted to spend a little time with you going through these cases. Now, in the first section, which is numbers Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel, the author of this essay presents a fundamental distinction. We know that if you violate a prohibition b'shogeg, you're not aware of the fact that you're doing it, was not deliberate, then you are punished. There is a, let's say for example, in certain cases you have to bring a karban chatos, right? But he says that the law of shogeg with regard to onas dvarim is much more complex, much more sophisticated. Okay, so he says, first of all, this is the most extreme case where he's not considered a shogeg. He's not even in violation of the Isur. D'lo yada sha'maisa shalo olu ligrom tsar l'chaveru. He had no clue that what he was doing might cause any pain. That he says, lo avar al Isur lo sonu, he's completely exonerated. In such a case, he made an honest-to-goodness mistake. And human beings are human beings. So if he did something, and we'll see the cases in just a moment, which he should have realized could cause harm to others, you know, just he didn't have the right intent, he didn't have the wrong intention, meaning he wasn't deliberate to cause pain to others. But he could have, he did, in all these cases he did. But the difference is, case number one is where he had no idea that what he was doing could in fact cause someone any pain. We'll see the example in just a minute about calling someone. But in another case, you know, he blocked someone who's parking his car, and he should have realized that he might cause him harm. So let's go through the cases.
The rock tone is only if you had the intention to do it.
No. If you had the intention to do it, that's called mazit. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about cases of shogi where you had no intention. But we assume that if you unintentionally harm someone, that's called shogeg, and you'll be punished for that. He says that there's a certain category which normally would be called shogi, but here in the Iser Vonah, it's so far removed that it's not even a shogeg. It's literally exoneration. You know, total vindication. You're not going to be punished at all.
It's not car of the mazit.
It's what I call karvla onus. Karvla onus. I mean, he doesn't use that term, so I don't want to superimpose my understanding, but that's what I think he means. Here's the case. Reuven sikemim Shimon. There was a bottom line agreement between Reuven and Shimon. Sheit kasher la b'shat laila v'ucheret. Call me up at midnight. Now Shimon says to Reuven, I keep late hours and I need to hear from you. I'll be busy until midnight. Call me at that hour. Reuven inadvertently made a mistake in dialing with one digit. And as a result, he woke someone up at that hour. So the Machaber of this Sefer claims that in such a case, if he apologizes in a proper way, how do you say benimus in English?
Manners.
With manners, I guess, yeah, with the proper manners. You know, I'm sorry, I must have made a mistake, I didn't mean you. And by the way, I don't know, I can't talk in terms of anyone else, but here, I can talk in terms of myself. I know very often I make a mistake, and I'm off by one digit. Not at 12 midnight, hopefully, but it happens very often. In this case, Reuven dialed someone at a late hour. You know, especially if you're calling chutzlar, it's like, you know, they're like no end to how many numbers there are. You know, so you made a mistake in one.
What times are there?
Yeah, and sometimes you're not aware of the time difference. That's also true, Harvey. That's an excellent example.
I'm not sure that is the same case. Really, you should be aware of it.
Oh, okay. So that's the safer of what he says. Achen. He says, now I have the limitation rule. He says, you know, in what case are you guilty? Even though it's shogeg, you have no intention. He says, if you were careless when you dialed it, you know, you didn't take extra precaution. It's sort of like the issue of malpractice in medicine. You know, the poskim is based on the famous Tashbase. They make the following distinction. If the physician followed what would normally be considered, you know, the classical medical procedure, he didn't come up with some crazy new procedure that he was testing out on his patient and he killed them by accident. No, we're talking about a physician who, you know, if you took a panel of physicians, they would all agree. What do you say?
Accepted medical practice.
Exactly. Accepted medical practice. The Tashbait says that if you made a mistake, let's say, for example, you know, as you were cutting, you know, a surgeon, like, you know, the hand slipped a little bit, you know, over the course of a lifetime, a surgeon is a human being. He's gonna make mistakes. We all make mistakes, you know, so that's not culpable. If, on the other hand, you know, he was totally negligent, you know, he didn't really take care. For example, there's a very famous case in Halacha about a physician who didn't subject his patient to the right tests. You know, first, let's say, for example, you know, a surgeon has to know about, right, I don't know much about medicine, but there's a famous case in Halacha. A surgeon has to know about the heart, you know, even though he's not a cardiologist, he's not doing surgery on the heart, he's doing surgery on the kidneys or whatever it is, but he must first make sure that there are no coronary There's no coronary history of coronary illness in this case, and it turns out that the patient died of heart failure on the table while the surgeon was, so that's already negligence. Or if a person, you know, a Rofe decides that despite what's accepted medical practice, he comes up with a whole new idea, you know, why not, you know, try it out, you know. Like my father was operated on by Beck. Now Beck, who was a surgeon, a heart surgeon in New York about 100 years ago. If my father were alive, he'd be 103, I think. I'm the Ben Skuna. My father was 40 when I was born. Well, actually, my father almost died when I was an embryo because he was operated on by a guy named Beck. And Beck decided, it was one of the famous cases in New York City of open heart surgery, very early in that. And Beck decided that you have to put talcum powder into the heart. Because he decided that if you add talcum powder into the heart, it induces scar tissue, and that's very healthy for the heart. And he got away with this, by the way, for about 11 months. You know, how many people were operated on by this guy, you know, until finally they discontinued the procedure. And years later, when my father needed a second heart surgery, it was almost impossible to find a physician in America who had successfully operated on a second time around on a Beck patient, if you know what I mean. Alright, I got off a little bit on a tangent. He says the following: all this applies if there's no element of pshia of negligence. If there's an element of pshia, then there's a violation of lo sonu, which means he has to ask for mechila and he has to do tshuva. Then he has in number Yudalid, Adam Shainim is coming Litzaris Chaver Valhu Yodea. He knows Shamaisish Lo Alu Ligrom Tsar Lechavero. He says, on the other hand, if a person, as opposed to case number one in number Yudalid, where he has no idea that what he's doing might cause anyone, he thinks he's dialing the right number. But here, what does he do? Ruvein Chasam B'mechonit Takvish. He parks in a way where people can't get by. By the way, I live on a street here called Rabbi Meir. I mean, if you can't find parking, it's almost impossible to put your car on the street in a way that it doesn't block. There's just not enough room. In other words, you have a car parked on the left side of the road, cars on the right side. There's just enough room for your car to get through. In fact, when you drive down my street, you have to go very slowly. Some people are smart. When they park their car, they take the mirror and they fold it in, you know, because otherwise they'll lose a mirror. So Ruvein Chasam B'chonit Takvish, Lo Haita Lo Kavana Litzar Acherim. You know, he thought he'll run in, he'll run out, and he, you know, nobody's going to be harmed or delayed by this. Hu Yada, but you can't deny that he knew Shu Alul. Alul means there's a possibility, or an element of almost probability, ligrom tsar, that'll cause ibud zman linahagim shiamtinlo, others are going to have to lose time when they're on the way. Now, by the way, this is very much cultural. Like in Israel, if you slow someone up by 2 seconds, forget it. You know, he'll hit the ceiling. There, that's it. There are countries, and it's hard for Israelis to believe that such a thing exists, where people actually are laid back about it. They take the time.
They don't hit the horn about 2 seconds.
Correct. In New York, where I was brought up, it's like Israel. You know, it's, forget it. You know,
it's not as bad.
It's gotten a little better lately?
Not as far as the horn goes, but unfortunately, and I think Achena Bay Israel, double parking is a big issue.
Big issue. I read once a tshuva from Rav Perlow, he's the Novominsky Rebbe from the Aguda, about double parking in Borough Park. Borough Park is overly crowded. And these are serious issues of Ono. Let's go on to the top.
I have to dive in Myra, so you double process. I have to dive in Myra. What, you have to go to work?
Right. What do I care? I got to dive in Myra. Right. So Chil Hashem, in addition to Ono's Torah. Ono. Now, on the left side, he wants to know Biksav. What happens if instead of saying something to someone, you harm him by writing? What happens? Ruvein shalach michtav le'adam mesuyam. Instead of asking him what price, and he has no interest in buying the object, he sends him a letter. Today we have email or other methods of communication. Mevakesh, and he asks for what's called a hatzat mechir. You know, give me a price for a certain object. And he had no intention of buying it. He just wanted to know the price. And without telling the seller that that's what his interest was, the seller took his time. You know, he said, I don't know if you've ever seen in Israel, when you write Hatzat Mechir, it's a whole gotcha spiel. You know, it's I guess in any country, but it takes a lot of time. And then when the requester, you know, tells him, I had no intention of buying it, he gets so upset. Gar lach savah, or if he doesn't even tell him that, he's disappointed that the fellow did not take him up after he made this whole atzat mechir. You know, this is my wife in her business. You know, she's constantly, you know, people, let's say they buy an apartment, they buy a flat, and they want her to do it. They want to know how much it's going to cost them. You have to do the kitchen, do this, that, and the other thing. And for her to make up a hatzat mechir is a whole ganz of business. She has to call her workers, get an idea, put in a couple of prutot for herself to make a little profit. To support her husband's a kailnik. I'm just kidding. We get well paid here. Yeah, if you believe that. No, I'm just joking. I'm joking. So in this case, there's an onas dvarim b'ksav. So we spoke about three types of onas dvarim. There's one onas dvarim classically b'dibur. You insult someone verbally. Verbal abuse, as we call it. Then we have the second carry we saw in the Sefer HaChinuch, remez, where the abuse itself is not explicit. We had the category where you make with the face, you know, a certain grimace with the face. So that's the third category. Now we have the fourth category, even in writing.
So I don't know, you know, to ask him Shadas, but there are instances where you walk into a store and to look at the price tag, you're not asking anybody.
Oh, that's smart.
But then
that's
a person might come over to you and say, can I help you? And you say, no, I'm just looking.
Right, that's fine. That's fine. You know, as long as if you're handling the item, so sometimes stores don't want their items handled. But if they have something on display which is meant for handling, like so sometimes you buy a furniture, you want to buy a bed or a couch, they tell you sit on it, you know. That's already different. If you go, for example, to IKEA in Netanya, you know, that stuff has been sitting there for months and everybody and their uncle jumps on the beds, but that's the way they do it, you know. They figure maybe you'll decide to buy.
So right. The shuk was handing out pieces of challah.
So that people might buy his chalv.
You take it because you feel like a chalv. You have no intention of.
Yeah, maybe you should tell him. Look, I'm not in the. He'll probably tell you to try it anyway, because he thinks that maybe, you know, if you'll enjoy it a lot, yeah, he'll tempt you. He'll induce your appetite.
He's at you in his fingers.
He says, "Beremez that we saw already." And he quotes a whole bunch of sources about the remez. And then he has himanut mi'atzalah mitzar. He says, if a person, not only are you enjoined from causing a person tzar, you are also enjoined to prevent a person from suffering. And if you could do so, and you know, you can come to his aid and help him and help him avoid a kind of a tzar situation, that's also an obligation.
Is he going to deal with the case of where your wife buys a new dress and you've got to be honest or not honest? Is he going to...
I hope so. Let's see. Again, there are a lot of cases here.
Shalom bias is above all.
Right. He says, Hafgadah pitomit. This is very psychological. Listen to this. He said, sometimes you scare someone, you tell them a bad piece of news, bevasachas. You know, you just, you know, whatever it might be, I don't want to say anything because it might be scary. But rather, beremes, you know, baofen hadragati. You know, the psychologists say that you can't be overwhelmed by bad news immediately. You have to tell them, you know, dribble drips and drabs. Or he says, even a besorah tova. Sometimes you want to tell him some good news. He can actually faint, you know, from hearing such great news. You just won the lottery, $15 million, whatever. So therefore, you have to make sure not to cause anyone harm. That's on page 6. And now if you turn to page 7, and this is getting back to the question of clarifying, you know, prices for something. So first he has the case, you know, the cases are always indented, so your eye should be able to count. It's a different font. You have that? So the first case, so Reuven got a gift for his wedding, and he's curious to know how much he paid. Okay, so that's the case that we discussed before. And then he has another case. Reuven Ratzo Likno, he wants to buy shoes. Why? Because he needs a pair of shoes which he can get from Chutz Laretz. You know, you can get it now over the internet. But he wants to find out what do they charge here in Israel. So he knows that it's worth it for him to... He says, Ratzo Likno, na'alayim yidegim yisuyam, for a certain style of shoes... And he's unsure in this case about his exact size. So he goes into a shoe store to try on shoes. No intention whatsoever to buy. He says, he tries on a whole bunch of pairs of shoes until he finds the exact size, and then he packs out and he orders it over the internet. Again, if he had an honest to goodness intention, maybe I'll buy it here, that's one thing. But if he just wants to know what the size is so they can order it online, and this is so relevant today, and people take advantage of other people. He says, however, on the left column, that if you're dealing not with the owner of the store, but you're dealing with a salesman, a salesperson, that's already a little bit different. Because then the issue is, are you causing them...
expectations.
No, just the opposite. Harvey, if you're dealing with the balabayit, with the owner of the store... Then you have to, the first question you have to ask yourself is expectations. You know, in other words, you're inducing the balabayit to get all excited that maybe you're a potential client of his. In the case of a salesperson, generally, again, every rule, obviously, you have to be sensitive, has an exception. Right, if he's on commission. But assuming the salesperson just is a hired person, gets paid for 9 to 5 to do the best job they can, there the issue of expectation is not an issue. There more the issue is wasting their time when they could use that time for another client. And then inadvertently, you're causing a loss to the owner of the store and maybe even to the salesperson, because the salesperson is putting in such an effort to try to get you to sell because they're good salesperson. Im Omer, however, he says to the salesperson, "Eini rak mevarer, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not going to buy.
Just looking.
Then that's something else. Then the salesperson decides, you know, look around, you know, take your time, my friend. Or the salesperson might get even more involved. And again, it's Hayud Varmolim. It's happened that a person came in with no intention to buy. It just happened to me and my wife recently. You know, we were in an airport and in Europe. And she didn't want to buy a pair of shoes, but she saw something that caught her eye. She asked the salesperson. And sure enough, now I'm doing damage control, you know. He says, "Gam beer telephone etzel balachanut asur." You know, to call up the owner of the store and hakam a chaynik on the phone, that's also going to cause him, you know, false expectations. And here's another case. This is so relevant. Listen to this. Reuven ratzal limkar beito. Reuven wants to sell his flat, and he has a neighbor. Now, there's a law of bar mitzvah that if all things are equal, then first dibs goes to your neighbor. Correct. But he's having trouble getting his neighbor to agree on a price. So what does he do? He publicizes the dira wherever it is, you know, Janglo. Through the agents. What?
Janglo.
What's it called?
Janglo
or whatever. And he publicizes that he's selling it at such and such a price. And if he finds someone who will match his price, then he's going to go back and sell it to someone else. Meaning to his neighbor. No, because he'd like to sell it to his neighbor, but he needs ammunition. So the ammunition he gets from the fact that he already got another buyer. He says, "Onam ima shachin eino muchan l'shalem." If the shachin indicates, look, this is my top price, you know, my bottom price, how do you say it? My top
bottom
price?
Bottom line.
So that's something else. Then he can put it up for sale. Or in the third case, he says, Reuven Hichlit Limkart Machonit, he wants to sell it in 3 months' time. Correct? So now he wants to check out the market, and he wants to find out if there's a desire of people to buy it at that price. He puts up a sign in his Machonit, you know, in his car. He has no intention of selling it for another 3 months. I had the following experience. I don't know if any of you know, I was looking for a flat here for a long time. And there was a certain person who, you know, through one of the members of that shul, let me know that, I don't know her, but through this member of the shul, one of the most wonderful members of that shul, that she was selling her flat. And this is the price that she was asking. We actually got an email from her, which she describes all the details. We came to see it. We got excited. We brought an engineer to check out certain possibilities within the apartment. Then when we finally told her, yeah, we'll pay for that price, she says, months ago I promised it to someone else. And we had such anguish from it. It was terrible. And the member of Ashul felt very embarrassed about it because, you know, he didn't mean any harm by it, but he gave us. He says, all this is based on creating tikvot shah. Okay, I see it's getting very late. The last thing I want to mention to you is about Hamachana Shem L'Chaveru. This is on page 9, which you don't have. Again, it's a very long essay, but Baruch Hashem, we did many chunks of it. And he says, you're not allowed to call a person by a nickname that might cause him embarrassment, terrible thing. And he writes that even if his friend is not embarrassed, listen to this, that's what I wanted to share with you. His friend got used to this name over the course of time, and he no longer is misbayish. Nevertheless, if the person had some shemitz, I don't know how to say, some inkling of an interest in embarrassing his friend, then even if his friend is not embarrassed by it, but he himself, the person who used that name, had intention of, you know, maybe it would be a little embarrassing for him, that itself, even though there's no kavana, there's no misbayesh over here, but there's kavana to be mevayesh him, he violates an iser. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll stop here.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Yeah, Hashem. We have one more page here that I want to discuss with you on page 8. This is the Pisrei Choshen. I'll tell you a little about it. The issue here is about what we call Gezel Shena. And in this tshuva of the Pisrei Choshen, which is authored by Rav Yaakov Bloy, one of the members of the Badatz of the Eidah Haredis in Yerushalayim, about Gezel Shena, he quotes an opinion of Rav Chaim Kanevsky that Gezel Shena comes out of the Beis Medrash of the Bali Musar, and it comes under Chesed and Ve'avta L'Rech Kamocha, but it's not a violation of Onas Dvarim to wake someone up and cause him loss of sleep. Rav Bloy, however, comes to the conclusion that, on the contrary, waking someone up is a violation of Onas Dvarim Midoraisa, because he's Mitzayir's friend by waking him up. And perhaps the reason why Rav Chaim was hesitant or inhibited about classifying Gezel Shena as Onas Dvarim is because the word Gezel shouldn't be used. You know, you can't steal sleep. That sleep is not a tangible that you can steal. So calling it Gezel, that's already a musadik of arth. And in the same tshuva of Rav Yaakov Bloy, he has a diun. He wants to know, is there an isur, or what's the law, when he wants to celebrate in his house, he wants to set up a simcha at a late hour, and the noise is going to interrupt and interfere with the sleep of his neighbors. Or, for example, in a Beis Medrash where the cold Torah Baruch Hashem is resounding at a very loud volume, and there's a Beit Megurim, there's someone who lives next door, can you learn Torah in a loud voice, knowing full well that it would cause a person a great deal of disturbance, and it would interfere with his sleep? He has a long presentation here, which right now we're not going to go through, and that's here on page 8 with many, many different comments here. And he writes, Misha ma'achil beis ha'kneses or marach b'tfiloso. He has a case here of opening the doors and the windows, and the noise is going to interfere with others. Many of these cases here, and many that we didn't even touch upon, he mentions here in the Pisrei Choshen Hilchos Gneiva Ve'Onah, Perek Tezvav. It's very, very recommended reading. Obviously requires a lot of study, way beyond the purview of this year. So I want to wish everyone a great deal of Hatzlacha and a Shavua Tov.